The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. I think it's time to do analytics around the Cardinals in free agency, also the NFL draft. There was a gigantic trade at the top of the draft board with the 49ers late Friday. What does that mean for the draft and quarterbacks? The draft comes up in a month, and Draft Central, that's what I call it. It's heavy-centric stuff. It's opening week for baseball, and because the Diamondbacks are not figuring to do anything, there's zero buzz around town. That's kind of annoying. The Suns have the best road record in the entire NBA. The Coyotes are trying to make it to the playoffs. Rick Tocchet's trying to not get fired. ASU football had their spring game yesterday, spring practice yesterday. I mean, we had all this stuff going on, and it was awesome. We are the busiest sports market in America nobody talks about. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Speaking of the ASU spring, I actually saw Claudia. I saw Claudia more than I saw my kids over the weekend. That's not good. And Spurge, I saw Spurge. When did I see you? Thursday.
Yep.
I think I have seen you guys more than I've seen my wife. That's just, I mean, like I said, it never stops. And our chairman of the board today is the Iron Man, Jared Nielsen. What is new with the two of you? What is going on? What are you guys seeing? What's going on? What's happening? Jump in there. Just go.
Go ahead, Claudia.
Oh, man, what's new? Under Armour this past weekend. That's where the first time I saw you, I guess, this weekend.
The Under Armour Combine. What do you think of that? High school players?
It's nice to see high school football in some capacity this time of year, so I have no issue with that. It's a long day, as most camps are, you know. How high can they jump, agility drills, wingspan, all of that. So I felt very small most of the day.
You are you're not going to be the starting center on the Sports 360 AZ team. That's,
no,
that is
not
true.
A chance. I think you that's your job.
You are the Spud Webb. No, I'm the big stiff. I can't move. So what you're telling the audience is, yeah, it was fun to watch them run and jump and all that stuff. But after a while, it's like, okay, they can run, they can jump. Right?
Yes, exactly. Most of them are there because they can do those things. But nice to kind of just get a whole bunch of, you know, some of the best high school football players in the area. Obviously, people were coming from Colorado, Utah, Nevada, all of that. So kind of just to see, you know, the diverse possibilities out there. A lot of guys already committed, which makes me wonder why they're there a little bit. But
I think some of it is the prestige. You go through it once. I ran into a couple daddy ballers, I call them, on the fence. They're just leaning over the fence. What do you think of my kid? Like, kid, you know, I've had four of them. He's fine. He's committed to a college. It's fine. I don't care if it's Lake Forest College. I don't care. I'm not impressed. Some daddy ballers are there too, and daddy mama ballers are there, or mama ballers, I should say, not daddy. Mama ballers are there to walk into their place of business on Mondays just to try to impress everybody with what their kid does. I get it. We all like to brag up on our kids. But then there are the kids that are just there, and the parents drop them off and let them do their thing and come back and pick them up rather than hovering over the fence line. And I'm not going to be critical. It's just, there's some people I see at every last event, and they're helicopter parents. And at some point, let your kid be a kid. I don't see you guys showing up at their English exam. I don't see you showing up their math class. And I don't know, when I see their GPA, maybe you should focus on that a bit more. That's just me.
Spurs, hey, well, they did get dressed head to toe in Under Armour gear, so I would have gone just for that. They got a whole lot of nice stuff.
You got a swag bag. What about you, Spurge? What did you do this weekend?
Yeah, football state of mind. Thursday, that's when I met up with you and drove down to Tucson to go see Arizona practice. And I think it was the first actual press conference I've attended in probably spring football for Arizona last year before COVID. So it's been over a year. So that was interesting. It was good to just see the energy at Arizona. I've never been there before, but Jed Fish has a different energy than what I would have imagined it was before. So just seeing that was interesting. Seeing just the way the program's being run. And then, yeah, yesterday, ASU spring practice or maroon and gold game, whatever they want to call it, scrimmage. That was, you know, it's what you expect. You know, you just got them running around and you've got a tight end from Oklahoma just, you know, balling against third stringers and everybody's going to talk about him now. And that's fine. That's great. But, you know, he's from Oklahoma and he's balling against the third stringers. I wonder why kind of thing. So, you know, you see some stuff and yeah.
There's a here's where I would go with this with you. Okay. You and I now have both seen, and you and Claudia, at some point, I think you're going to end up in Tucson watching U of A too. But Spurge and I have both seen the U of A and ASU in person here in the last week. The size differential, it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close. And this is not something where it's like, well, boy, ASU is better than U of A. You think they beat them 70-7, even though the coach had quit. Most of the players didn't want to be there. So I don't take much from that, but like ASU is miles ahead of where U of A is right now. But I think it's pretty clear to me that if Arizona State doesn't win this year, the people call them next year university or NYU. NYU, next year university. Well, next year the Sun Devils are going to be great. Yeah, and I've been hearing that since 1996, the last time they were in the Rose Bowl when they weren't playing UCLA. So I hate to sound kind of like a bang them over the head with a shovel. But, yeah, I'm sitting there yesterday watching them and saying, there's no reason why physically this team can't beat USC or UCLA. But they're 17-14 under Herm. And I was a guy that said, I think Herm's a good hire. But there's no question this is a put-up-or-shut-up year for them. What about you, Spurge?
Yeah, that's the biggest gap. When you look at a team like USC, the only advantage they still have is defensive front, offensive line. They've still got more size. They just recruit better in that asset. I think ASU is catching up, especially at skill positions. You've got more size, you've got more athleticism. So they're catching up. But I think to build like that long-term success, you got to be able to get that consistent size nationally in the trenches. Yeah. And I think they've got some nice players down there in the trenches on both sides. I don't know if they necessarily have the depth of size just yet. But this is the year. It's like you said, it's put up or shut up. Like, this is the time. I think they're close to hitting a peak. And then, you know, just to mention Arizona, they're, I think, heading in the right direction. But you can't say much when they've lost 12 straight. But they're kind of in two different zones right now because, yeah, Arizona size is not there. But that starts with the right coach that changed the culture. So we're waiting and seeing if that's what they've got on their hands. Sort of like ASU. The culture's changed, but now it's time to put up or shut up.
So, Claudia, you were there yesterday at Stadium 2, and you're there working on a piece that'll be in the TV show later and on the site. But I'm just curious, from your view, when you're watching them yesterday, you know, you came into ASU from another university, and so you have a different lens than what we have. And when you see the football team out here, did anything strike you yesterday, or was it just, hey, Brad, man, I'm sitting there shooting my piece and I'm out? Was there anything caught you?
Actually, a couple of things. Yes, I did come from a different university, Florida Atlantic University, not exactly known for their football.
What's their nickname? What's FAU's nickname?
Owls.
I forget. The Owls.
The Owls, yes. We did have a brief stint where Lane Kiffin was our head coach and had one, like, pretty half-decent year, just one. So it's really hard to compare.
Why are they the
Owls? There's so many Owls in South Florida. It totally makes sense. Burrowing Owls are like all over campus. We have like a whole preserve on campus just because there's owls there. So it's very appropriate.
Do you know, last week, not to digress, but that's what I do on this show. So last week when I'm taking my son around to colleges, we went to Baylor. Do you know they have an actual bear on campus next to the student bookstore?
That's awesome.
It was so awesome. The bear was hibernating. It was the middle of the day, and we must have stuck out like sore thumbs. Two guys that are over 6'6", walking around like touristas, and we're walking through this place. And said, oh, yeah, the bear is right here. So I'm leaning over, you know, looking down. You know, it's like when you go to SeaWorld and you're looking for the dolphin or whatever. The bear is just kind of laying there looking up at you like, hey, man, peace out. It was pretty cool. So the owls are the same thing? Like, you walk around campus and there's owls?
Yes, there actually are. You don't really see them because they're burrowing, though, so they're underground.
Yeah, yeah.
So not like what you think of. But it's funny that you, going back to ASU football, you brought up Jalen Conyers, the tight end from Oklahoma. Funny story, he's from Groover, Texas. And so he was an athlete that I covered while I was working in Amarillo. And I broke the story in Amarillo that he was transferring to ASU.
Wow.
And had his first interview in Amarillo. So I also think I was like part of the reason he transferred, like not really, but I was hyping up ASU quite a bit.
Oh, so recruiting on the side.
I was in on this before maybe it was known to people here in Arizona that he was likely going to go to ASU, broke the news in Amarillo, and he's a super nice guy. And yeah, it was, you know, like you said, I was focusing on my story, but when it's a name that's familiar for that reason, and I was constantly hearing Jalen Conyers while I was focusing on shooting my story on one of the girls who's on the only girl actually who's on the equipment team, obviously that stood out to me as well.
So what you're telling me is if I want a story on Conyers, you're the go-to person.
Yes, I have his phone number.
Wow. Look at you.
That sounds weird, but that's how we did it in Amarillo.
Will you ever go back to Amarillo, like drive through it? Is there any reason? Like, I've been told that Sean Miller has told some basketball recruits that are one and done's, like, hey, man, come here to Tucson, put 6 months in. You will never come back to this city ever, 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 ever again. Is that the same deal with Amarillo?
Yes and no. If it wasn't for the fact that I didn't actually get to cover Asad Poodle's minor league baseball game, I would never go back. But it feels ridiculous that I went to Amarillo with all the excitement about getting to cover a minor league baseball team, and then the season was canceled. And now that they're a D-backs affiliated team, they were previously the San Diego Padres.
Oh, that's right. D-backs,
I feel like it would be a crime for me not to ever see Asad Poodle's game after having lived there for a year. So there'll be some reason that I have to drive on the 40 at some point. My family's in Florida. So maybe if I like for some reason go on a cross country drive, do it in the summer, stop in Amarillo, see a Asad Poodle's game or two, keep driving.
I might have to give you like they're tied into the Diamondbacks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, and Southwest goes direct to Amarillo?
Not currently. They did before COVID.
Oh my gosh. So this is one of those deals. Spurge, you're not going to go. You're going to be done at Cronkite in December, but you've already had major market experience in San Diego. So you've already done that deal. But like, would you go to Pullman?
Depends on the situation now. I've always been open to living wherever, but we'll see how things sort of play out with where I've been. Not to have an ego, but I feel like there's...
Oh, you have an ego. You have a pretty
little
big
ego. It's a little bit.
I'm not going to market number 230. It's fun being a market 230. All right. Anything March Madness? Anything else that caught your guys' eye over the weekend in sports? Suns, U of A women? Anything at all before I kick you out of here, before I get over to Steve Palazzolo? Claudia, you got anything?
I forget the game, but there was a hockey game, college hockey game that went into five overtimes. And my fiance and his brother grew up in Minnesota. So all of their friends are big hockey fans. Them not so much. But my fiance's brother plays for the Rockies, and he had a friend from Minnesota here this past weekend. And he was glued to his phone for like 7 hours because this hockey game went into five overtimes.
Wow.
So that stands out because I didn't even know that was possible.
And
it was 1 a.m. that time. They stopped playing at 1 a.m. their time.
I'm just done. Anything else with you, Spurge?
March Madness has been crazy. Pac-12 is just crushing it. Bill Walton is somehow the only guy to get it somewhat right. And that's great. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to watch U of A Indiana tonight, women's Elite Eight. And the other games, like Oregon State Houston tonight. So the line on that is 8 for Houston. And the total, what do I have the total? Total's 129. Like, these are two teams playing defense. If I've got a few dollars bumping around, not to talk gambling too much, but I'm going to do it anyways. Watch that. All right, you two, good job. Good work. Claudia, I know you're working on a cool story for TV. Spurge, you've got a great story for TV. Claudia does On the Rocks, her feature that she actually tweeted that people are saying, hey, I really like it. I think it's great. Just fun. So you two just keep after it. Good seeing you guys, and get out of here. Scram.
All right. Bye.
Later. There's Spurge and Claudia. All right. On the other side, we will have Steve Palazzolo. Steve Palazzolo with Pro Football Focus. He will break down what the Cardinals have done here in free agency, and if they are good moves, bad moves, also the NFL draft at the top of the order. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, with all the uproar over whether the Cardinals made the right moves by adding veterans all over the place or the wrong moves, as some are suggesting, I figured let's go to PFF because through the years we've had Steve Palazzolo on through the years along with Sam Monson, good guys at PFF. They break it down. Steve, the host of PFF NFL podcast, senior analyst, he joins us for a few minutes. We're also going to dive into the draft just a little bit, but off the top, thanks for coming on board. And what do you make out of what's gone on out here with Steve Keim adding all these vets, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I think you looked at what the Cardinals are looking to do, and it's make a move and compete in this NFC West that has so many moving parts with the power move that the Rams made to go get Matthew Stafford. You see the Niners going up to get their quarterback. So I think the Cardinals see it, looked at last year and said, look, we're so close to the playoffs. We needed to take that next step, adding a J.J. Watt, adding an A.J. Green. I love a lot of the moves that they've made and reshaping the offensive line. Very aggressive at center with going after Corey Linsley and then settling on Rodney Hudson, who's probably the best pass-blocking center in the NFL. So I like the aggressiveness, and I think the Cards are really positioning themselves to be a top competitor next year.
Okay, from Pro Football Focus's point of view, Steve, when you look at J.J. Watt, how much gas is left in the tank? What are the numbers? What does PFF see in J.J. Watt?
I think there's plenty left in the tank. He was our number 7 overall edge defender last year. So it's all about perspective. He's the guy who used to be number 1 every single year, but he was still number 7 last year. And then when you break it down further, it's about where he won and where he was successful. And he did his best work over the last 2 years, rushing the passer from the interior, the number 4 pass rushing grade in between the tackles over these last 2 seasons. So I think that gives the Cardinals a ton of flexibility. So they don't need to treat him as a traditional edge defender. He's not going to just be Chandler Jones on the other side. I think Watt is going to be that movable chess piece, just adds all sorts of flexibility to that defensive front, which carries over the theme, you know, that the Cards have had over the last couple of years of adding Isaiah Simmons types that add flexibility and versatility. We've seen how creative they were on third down last year, stacking the line of scrimmage. And I think J.J. Watt just gives them another guy that's going to win one-on-one, and they can dictate those matchups to put him in position to succeed.
Stick with the defense. Pro Football Focus's view of Malcolm Butler.
It's another guy I like quite a bit. You know, I look at the Tennessee Titans losing top, you know, 2 starting cornerbacks. And I was like, man, that's going to hurt them not having Malcolm Butler. And he had a couple down years in 18 and 19, but last year he bounced back, was one of our highest graded corners, number 14 in all the league last year. And I think Butler's a guy who'll give up some yards, but a tight man coverage type of player, makes plays on the ball. And again, I just think the Cardinals are doing this a good job of taking advantage of guys that have been released, like a J.J. Watt, like a Malcolm Butler, and just picking their spots where they're going to add veterans, you know, on the cheap compared to, you know, maybe what some other guys got. So I like Malcolm Butler quite a bit. And I look at, you know, Patrick Peterson and Drake Kirkpatrick last year. That was a weakness for the Cardinals last year at corner. So I think Butler should be an upgrade.
Okay, so fans ask how much of an improvement or going the opposite direction is Malcolm Butler versus losing Patrick Peterson?
It's an upgrade at this version of Patrick Peterson. I think we saw over the last 2 years, Peterson's not the same guy. I think, you know, he's in Minnesota now, and I think there's a path for him to succeed, Peterson, if you put him against bigger receivers at this point in his career, but better route running receivers. You know, if he has to go up against a Tyler Lockett or any of those 49ers receivers that they trot out there, Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel, that's a mismatch against Patrick Peterson at this point in his career. He's just bigger and, you know, doesn't move as well as he once did. Malcolm Butler can handle those types of receivers. So you probably don't want Malcolm Butler going up against DK Metcalf a whole lot in the division, but the Rams receivers, Tyler Lockett, the 49ers receivers, those are all good, better matchups for, say, a Malcolm Butler than it is for Patrick Peterson at this point in his career.
Steve Palazzolo breaking it down with Pro Football Focus. Make sure you check them out. Make sure you check Steve out, the host of PFF, the NFL podcast. Switch over to the defensive side of the football. You said something off the top. I agree with you about Rodney Hudson. I think if you look at everything they put into Kyler Murray, and it's year 3 for him, it's year 3 for Cliff. It's not like the seat isn't warm under Cliff. I think it is a little bit if they don't break through this year. So you've got to upgrade the offensive line. They made 2 moves on that front. Walk me through both additions and what PFF sees there.
Yeah, so Rodney Hudson coming in at center, Kelvin Beachum coming back at right tackle. Love both moves. You know, Rodney Hudson is a guy, you know, a good center will give up maybe 10 pressures per year. Rodney Hudson had a three-year stretch where he gave up 11. Now, that was 2017, 18, and 19. Last year was his lowest graded season in a while for us, but he's still one of the better centers in the league. And as I said, the premier pass blocking center in the league. He's a little bit better as a pass blocker than he is as a run blocker. But, you know, that's the key to Arizona right now. It's about that pass game. It's about, you know, what they've done from a run game perspective has been, you know, just counting the box and outmanning the defense and using Kyler Murray last year. So you don't need an elite run blocker. You do need a secure pocket. So I think that Hudson's going to be a mass center from a pass protection standpoint. And Kelvin Beachum's a similar player, better as a pass blocker than he is as a run blocker. You get him on the cheap. That is exactly the type of signing for a team that has just a good, solid offensive line. A Kelvin Beachum is a perfect complement. You don't want him as your best offensive lineman, but when he's your third or fourth option, you've got a really good O-line. And so I think that shows that Arizona's doing a good job from a team-building standpoint, and I feel good about their line going into next season.
I'll phrase this last question on the free agents in the way that I did with J.J. Watt. How much gas is left in the tank with A.J. Green?
Now, I'm a little bit more concerned about A.J. Green than I am with J.J. Watt. You know, there was a point last year where I actually compared him to Larry Fitzgerald, and I said, you know, A.J. Green goes from this really good deep thread and a guy who just he knows how to get open and win at the catch point to a guy that's not really separating the way he once did. A lot like Larry Fitzgerald, the guy that's not going to go dominate one-on-one, but he knows how to get open on the short stuff. And obviously he's a smart player, Fitzgerald. And A.J. Green is going to be that type of player, I believe, more of a possession type. But he did look like he lost a step or two last year. So I'm definitely more concerned with Green than I am with J.J. Watt. But as long as he doesn't have to do a ton of the heavy lifting, and he won't have to with Nuke Hopkins there, with Christian Kirk, and hopefully Andy Isabella, and Keyshawn Johnson can still provide a bit of a downfield threat there. So if A.J. Green is just a complimentary piece, I think he'll be okay. But expectations definitely have to be tempered for him compared to what he once was. Much like a Patrick Peterson, you know, both guys came in the same year, 2011. They were rivals back in the SEC. Both guys have kind of lost a step at this point, though.
Steve Palazzolo with us. Before I get you out of here, the big trade over the weekend with the 49ers. As you look at the draft today, and I'm going to put the Cardinals out of it. They're in the middle of the first round. But how does it fall the first 3 to 4 picks from what you see today? Is it pretty clear, Brad, it's all quarterbacks? Or is there still something that could be happening in a big way before April 29th and draft night?
I mean, I think we're definitely seeing 3 QBs off the board. Trevor Lawrence, I'm assuming Zach Wilson to the Jets. And I think the Niners make this move to go to number 3 because they're very comfortable with the next 3 options, really, whether it's Trey Lance from North Dakota State, whether it's Justin Fields from Ohio State or Mac Jones from Alabama. There's a lot of rumblings that it's Mac Jones, and I think that's it'd be a fascinating move. I mean, he's the guy that hits open throws the best and would execute an offense, but it does limit what you can do from a run game perspective, and I think that's what Kyle Shanahan's trying to do. I think he's trying to take that run game to a whole next level. So having one of those quarterbacks that can help in the QB run game, much like RG3 did in 2012 with under Kyle Shanahan. So to me, it feels more like a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance, Kyle Shanahan trying to hit a home run with a couple of those toolsy quarterbacks. I'll lean Justin Fields today, but there's a lot of smoke around Mac Jones being the guy at number 3 for the Niners.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time and your insight as always, Steve. Good stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you.
There's Steve Palazzolo with us. Make sure you check out Pro Football Focus. They do great work, and through the years, whenever they've come on, they've delivered just like that. We appreciate Steve, and we're back with more after this timeout. Thanks again to Steve Palazzolo. Good stuff. Breaking it down. So there's a few things that I want to get into in this segment, and so I'm going to be all over the place, but they're just notes from the weekend that caught my eye. This is the start of the Major League Baseball season. This coming week, the Diamondbacks, I'm already getting hit up from people wanting me to come on their show to talk about the Diamondbacks. And my response is pretty simple. Y'all come on, but I'm going to talk about other things because here in Phoenix, I just don't feel like there's a buzz. I don't. Torrey Lovello is in the last year of his deal. Derek has said they don't feel any sense of urgency. So if the team starts out 8-22, which is possible, especially with Zach Gallen not being ready to go, then you could see a managerial change pretty quick. There's going to be this point somewhere in the first 2-3 months. The way the calendar works, you figure out what you have by Memorial Day. And then you look at 4th of July. And then you look at the trade deadline. So if they're hanging around, it wouldn't surprise me the first couple of months. That's how it usually goes here in Arizona. We see a baseball team that hangs around. I'm not bagging on it. I'm excited to go to games. But I'm also a realist. They're not going to compete with the Dodgers. They're not going to compete with the Padres unless injuries happen all over the place and the unexpected happens all over the place with both those teams above them. And then the Diamondbacks just simply have to produce. So Madison Bumgarner was named the starting pitcher for opening day. That's not a surprise. And it's going to be, I don't want to use the word interesting. It just seems so vanilla. It'll be interesting to see how they do this year. It's typical. I don't really know. I don't want to take a stand. I don't think they're going to be great. I think they're a team that can win 75 to 80 games. If they win anything above that, that's success, I would believe, as we're sitting here right now looking at the situation. Arizona State football yesterday, as I mentioned to Spurge off the top, so I'm sitting there yesterday watching them go through their paces, and it's clear that they passed the eyeball test, okay? We are so quick in this valley to hype things up and get so excited, and then every stinking single year it ends up being, no, things happened. Things just didn't work out. Oh, last year it was COVID. Yeah, it was COVID. I'm not downplaying COVID, but the USC game was, okay, it just was. And so, you know, you can't just sit there all day long. I don't think that most of you want to just sit there and say, rah, rah, go team, and everything's great, when it's not. It's like talking with Steve there about the Cardinals. It's been 5 years since they've been to the postseason. So I don't need cheerleading. I just don't. And so to that end, when there are stories that are out there, like tonight, U of A women's basketball is interesting to me. All the stuff about the NCAA overlooking women's sports, this has been going on for years. I could go back to when I was the original play-by-play voice, the Phoenix Mercury, and we're flying three to an aisle on Southwest all around the country, bumping around with Nancy Lieberman Klein and Cheryl Miller, and we're three to a row. Meantime, the NBA team is flying private. That was 20 years ago. 25 years ago, something like that, long time. And then having two daughters, for me, I've seen women's sports marginalized through the years. It doesn't pencil out in terms of TV ratings. There will always be people that will say, well, no, you're not being true on that point. Here's a metric. You can find any metric you want to hit your mark. The fact of the matter is, when it comes to if you played that game at the same time on the same network, you're not going to get as many viewers. That's just a fact. Tonight, I'll watch U of A against Indiana. At the same time, Oregon State will play Houston. And guess what? The number is going to be bigger for the men's side. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying when you cannibalize a sport, which basically is what's happening tonight, you can either choose to watch, I'm going to watch the men's game or the women's game. They're going to be out at the same time. But I can watch one or the other rather than, well, why don't we just stagger them? Not that hard. So I'll watch that. You know, March Madness and the tournament itself, when I watched how UCLA and Mick Cronin were able to hang in there in the adverse situation of having the game tied up at a three and force overtime, usually when that happens, the team just goes in the tank. You got to give him a lot of credit and UCLA a ton of credit. It's good for college basketball. It just is when UCLA is relevant. It's good for college basketball when you can have other teams come along, like a Loyola of Chicago, like tonight Oregon State. But there are certain programs, like this year, the tournament has been just fine without having Kentucky or having Duke or having Indiana or having the U of A. But when those programs come back, and they will, it's a better tournament when you have those types of programs in that can make a deep run. Am I looking forward to tomorrow night to see Gonzaga against USC? Absolutely, because I think Eric Mobley is the best player that I've seen so far in this tournament. what USC is doing, that's been a program. They brought Andy Enfield in, and they weren't very good initially. And I'm thinking, this guy, Florida Gulf Coast, talking a big game, he's going to get fired. Instead, here they are running, doing their thing, taking teams apart. And now it gets real for the Zags. The hit on Gonzaga has been, well, they play in a weak conference. They're never really challenged. They're unbeaten this year, so everybody's looking at that angle. And so, to me, Gonzaga, USC, that's must-see. That is must-see. Like tonight, Arkansas, Baylor, because Eric Musselman was here. Eric Musselman's wife actually was trying to work for us for a bit when they were here with Herb Sendek. And so I got to know them a little bit. And I'm a big fan of what Eric's been able to accomplish. I think they win tonight. I think Arkansas takes down Baylor. I mentioned earlier the total tonight on Oregon State Houston's 129. Now, I don't know if the wise guys are thinking that Houston's going to put up 80 and win 80-40 and blow out. They've got the line at 8.5. Maybe that's the way they're going to go. But defense and rebounding, that's the storyline of this game tonight. For Oregon State to be as good as they are and to reach this round, it is terrific for the Pac-12. Because usually Oregon State's one of those programs, they come into town and it's, okay, Arizona State should beat them. They should split it with the Oregon schools. And, well, that's not the case. It's not the case. And I don't know if you've seen, I'm not going to go through it today, but Bobby Hurley's just gone out and landed three guys, boom, 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 in the transfer portal. He's got them all lined up to come here for next season, which is the right thing to do. You got to do something, send a message. One last thought in this segment, that is the Suns. So the Suns play Atlanta tomorrow night. They're at home. The Suns are in the dog days of the season. They're taking care of business. They won 3 of 4 down in Florida. They got away yesterday, fell asleep for a little bit against Charlotte. And Devin Booker continues to play lights out. It's like he's just gotten better and better and better. I don't know if behind the scenes, if Monty and Chris Paul just climbed into his head. When I watch him play and he gets frustrated and loses his temper on things, I'll hear some analysts say you got to control your temper still. I've heard that. But, boy, they're playing it like a team that even if the Lakers go get Andre Drummond, which they're going to, Drummond said he's going to go to the Lakers. Lakers are going to sign him. And then you have LaMarcus Aldridge going over to Brooklyn. So you have the Lakers and Brooklyn going head-to-head. Kind of like the Suns just standing back and saying, all right. You know, I don't think that if you look at where the Lakers are right now, they don't have Anthony Davis. They don't have LeBron right now. So they're not the real team. And so they're going to lose a bunch of games. But can they be had in a series early on? I don't know if they're going to be back and at 100%. I certainly don't believe that they can just walk in and flip on a switch. That it's going to take a few games for timing. The Suns are working themselves in a position where they're going to have home court advantage. I like what Denver did at the trade deadline, but where the Suns are, it's just like, wow, they are really doing things in a way that makes you say they've got it figured out. And I don't know about you. How often have you seen or heard Robert's name? It's really interesting to me. The owner's just disappeared, and that's a good thing. I hear all about James Jones, and I hear all about Monty Williams, and that's it. And if they show Robert, Fitz is usually sitting with him, and people love Fitz. So this whole optic, I think, is part of it, too. I've run into people in my circles, and my circles are people that have been in the Valley for 10, 20, 30 years that know that the Suns, when they are going, that they are the dominant team in the Valley sports discussion, and it's not even close. And they'll say, yeah, Sarver's not even around anymore. So the Suns are intentionally trying to keep Robert out of sight. It's working. It is. And it helps that they're winning. All right? Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. The show repeats over and over and over for the next 24 hours. We are self-funded. That means the partners that you see in these breaks, these commercials, these are people that believe in what we do, not just here on this site, in this stream show, but also in the content on our site and in our television show. You can watch that on Fox Sports Arizona, about to become Bally Sports Arizona this week. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, airs 12 times per week. Have yourself a great Monday.